We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is Mike Gorman, and you're listening to Green with Envy with Will, Adam, and Greg.
All right, everybody. It is the greatest time of year. The NBA playoffs are here. The Celtics are back to games that matter. They're up 1-0 on the Celtics. The three-man weave is in the building. We're going to break it all down for you. Coming up next here on Green with Envy, you know the deal. Let's lock in. What up, what up, what up? Welcome into another playoff edition of Green with Envy. The NBA playoffs are back, and we got the three-man weave in the building. This is your boy, Will. We are checking in. How you doing? How you living? Joining me today, first up, we got my best friend, co-host, and the coach of our podcast. Happy Monday morning to you. What's going on, my guy, Greg Menakis?
What's good, man? How you doing?
It is a Monday morning. You know, I am not a morning person as we record this, so I am trying to force the coffee into my veins like Popeye does his spinach, and I'm going to power through this podcast with enthusiasm and excited mannerisms all throughout. So if you're watching on YouTube, the hands are going to start moving because your boy needs some movement here to get us through. And let's bring in the final member of the three-man weave. He is the lead writer for Celtics Blog. He is the leader of the Taylor gang. It's the one and only Adam Taylor. What's popping?
What's popping? What's popping? Celtics one zip up over Miami. Playoff time. I'm pumped as shit. You know what? I saw somebody in my Instagram comments yesterday saying the only reason Boston won that game was because Jimmy Butler wasn't playing and because Terry Rozier wasn't playing. And I just want to say, no, they didn't win because they're not good enough to win. That's how it's going to be. I'm saying Celtics in five, baby. Let's get into this.
I love this. Adam's like a kid on Christmas morning right now. He's so excited that we have meaningful basketball to talk about again after 3 weeks of just nothing.
I mean, honestly, like as much as the win was exciting, the fact that we could actually take stuff from this game, like it has been... Okay, let's audience come into me, Greg, and Adam's life, and anyone else that you follow in Celtics media coverage. It's been really tough these last 3 weeks. It's been really tough for us to provide any type of meaningful coverage about any of the basketball games that the Celtics have actually played in 3 weeks, which included 10 days of the Celtics' top six players not playing a single minute of real basketball. So yesterday was like finding water in the Sahara Desert. Just being able to have real, meaningful basketball in front of our faces. And before we get into the game, I got a little surprise for you guys. Like I always do, I like to have a little bit of music that goes along with it. So let's enjoy our little playoff theme that we got here today.
Basketball, give me the ball because I'm gonna dunk it! Basketball, give me the ball because I'm gonna dunk it! Basketball, give me the ball because I'm gonna dunk it!
All right, had to get that out there. Shout out to the SNL Round Ball Rock skit, one of my favorites out there. Hopefully you have enjoyed that too. Adam, have you ever heard that before?
I have not heard that before. Sorry, I was telling the dog to be quiet. I have never heard that before. I genuinely assumed you'd gone on to like a copyright-free music download and just stumbled across that piece of genius.
Oh, no. That's from an SNL skit back in the day with Tim Robinson and Jason Sudeikis. The first time I ever heard it, I think I listened to it on loop for, I don't know, probably like 3 or 4 straight days. Unbelievable clip. That was just the audio, but if you need the full video, which I recommend you do go watch, Round Ball Rock, SNL, great time. All right, guys, let's jump into it here. Let's start talking about some actual basketball. Game one, Celtics take down the Miami Heat 114-94. Greg, there's a lot of places that we can start here. We could talk about Jason Tatum's first career playoff triple-double. We could talk about 6 players in double figures. We could talk about the Celtics shooting almost 45% from the three, their plus 10 rebound advantage. There's a lot of places that we can go. The floor is open. Direct us to what caught your attention in the first meaningful basketball we've had in 3 weeks.
Well, I think the thing I was most interested in, and most people were, I think it was a big narrative going into this game, was how the Celtics were going to be able to handle the Miami Heat zone. How frequently would the Heat end up going to the zone, and when would they employ it, right? They started off the game in man for the first 9 minutes or so, and then they finally went to the zone when they realized that they couldn't really handle the Celtics when they were in man-to-man defense. We were just getting whatever we wanted. So at the end of the first quarter, the Heat end up going to that zone. The Celtics still get whatever they want, wide open threes the entire time. The Heat were going zone against us, but we just missed the shots at the end of the first quarter. So I think there was a little fool's gold for the Heat going to that zone because the Celtics, they were hunting corner threes any time that the Heat went to that zone. We played a lot of advantage ball, got the ball to Tatum in the post, and then triggered double teams, pass, swing, open three in the corner. Sam Hauser hitting 4 of those threes. So that was the thing that really stood out to me, is the way that the Celtics were clearly prepared for this Miami Heat zone, especially when the Heat zone was extended up. If you notice, one thing that they did is they really tried to get the ball up quick. So they had a little get ahead pass to about half court area, and then just one more pass to the corner, and then establish a post presence there with Tatum, or just shoot that quick corner three. Those quick corner threes didn't go down, but overall the Celtics just absolutely torched that zone. I think I saw a Spoonie from First to the Floor tweet out that the Celtics were 1.56 points per possession against the zone. So we were just absolutely shredding it.
They were in the zone. I wanted
What else stood out to you, Adam?
I was trying to think of how to do an EA Sports, but like Boston Celtics in the zone, but I couldn't figure it out in time, so it flopped. No, look, sticking with the zone for a moment, one thing that I really enjoyed was they didn't have to rely on any form of actions to get people going in, like into that like nail extended area where they were working out of a bunch. That's good because it means that there's not as much film for Miami to kind of counter that from. So that's a wrinkle that they can add in games 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. As that zone becomes a little bit more difficult to break down, you can start throwing in some slice action, some shuffle cuts or whatever, just to be able to continue penetrating. So it was good that Mazzulla and the team held that back. I think that working out of the mid-range in general was a good idea for this team, just based on Miami dare you to shoot a bunch of threes, right? Like, it's a trap. They're one of the best teams in the NBA for defending the free. They're for defensive field goal percentage, I think they're top 5 in the NBA on the perimeter, but they're in the bottom 5 of the NBA for threes taken against them. So it's definitely a trap that you can fall into. Let us fire a bunch of threes because they let us do that. Rather than kind of falling into that trap, that Boston went into the post early. They had that nice dunk from Jaylen Brown where he kind of like fake round the back, fake one way turn, come through and jam it down, and that kind of set a tone for working in that mid-range area. And then once the defense started overreacting, you're drawing guys away from the rim. Another thing about Miami is they're one of the best teams in the NBA at deterring you from getting to the rim, but they're one of the worst teams at actually guarding the rim once you get there. So they try and keep you out from there. So when you're in the post and you're drawing defense away from the rim, you're drawing defense away from the perimeter, you're blowing up the two things that they want to do the most. They want to impact shots around the three-point line, and they want to stop you shooting around the rim. So you're drawing that defense in, and then you're making high-level reads out of it. It just forced Miami into some tough spots from the jump, and that gave Boston just a level of control over the tempo of the game and over the, how they dictated play that Miami really struggled to get back until the Celtics took their foot off the gas in the fourth.
Yeah, Adam, one stat, you mentioned how Miami likes to kind of bait you into shooting threes. Normally, they're pretty good at contesting threes. Last night, they were not good at contesting threes. The Celtics shot 49 three-point shots. Miami was only able to contest 17 out of the 49 three-point shots. So 32 out of 49 were uncontested threes. And that speaks to how the Celtics were able to just... Yeah, not a good recipe for the Heat. So we took the... Miami forces a lot of threes, but we took the threes that we wanted, and a lot of it happened off of early post actions, especially against that zone with Tatum getting the ball on the left block and then triggering the double team. He kicked the ball out, swing over to Hauser. One, Will, can you pull up the clip that's loaded up with the Hauser slot cut? I mean the Horford slot cut.
Yeah, I got you here.
No whistle, no harm.
Robinson could be a key player for the Heat in this series. Hauser tries again. Hauser hits again. Four three-pointers here on the second.
Yeah, I wanted to pull this clip up, Adam. I saw you tweet about this during the game. And, you know, I'd love to kind of just hear your thoughts on the process there, because I know that you thought that Horford's cut out of the slot there was probably the key to that play happening.
Yeah, so I'm just pulling it up on my Twitter feed now so I can watch it again as I'm talking about it, right? So you see that Tatum comes, sets the screen for Drew Holiday. Drew kicks it back, screens the screener, draws two. As Horford cuts in, he draws two defenders on the weak side. He gets picked up by Bam. As he gets picked up by Bam, you've got Duncan Robinson, who's already cheating over. He's offering some, like, paint help anyway. But Horford's cut opens up that passing lane diagonally. You see Hauser lift out of the corner. Some hoop heads will call that shaking. He shakes out of the corner just to create that direct line for Tatum to fire that pass off from, which for me is one of the biggest improvements in Tatum's game this year, is just how quickly he sees that pass, how quickly he makes that pass, and how easy it looks to go side to side for him. But without Horford making that cut, I think Bam's in that passing lane. You don't really get the angle for Hauser to lift or shake out of that corner. And then for Tatum to be able to make that pass, I think Bam gets his hands on it. Horford reading the defense, seeing that that's probably going to be one of the best options available for Tatum and making that cut, just in, like, not initiating the defensive rotation, but definitely occupying that defense and kind of punishing Duncan Robinson for cheating so far off. Because once you, at that moment in time, when Robinson's basically under the rim, Adebayo splitting the difference between Horford and Hauser, by that making that cut, Adebayo has to commit to Horford. You have to. Otherwise, it's an easy pass into the paint for Horford. Horford's going to get a bunny. So you're forcing Adebayo to make a commitment. Then Duncan Robinson's now got to close back out, but he's got to change direction. So that takes a beat. And the ball moves faster than a man at that point, and with the shake as well, creating a little bit more separation. It was just an easy catch and shoot. I thought it was a high-level read from Tatum and a veteran move by Horford making Adebayo commit.
Yeah, and I think,
I mean, and this is the evidence of, you said, you know, Jason Tatum's full season evolution of, you know, his passing improving, his rebounding improving, his all around game, I think is probably the easiest way to say that, as though the statistics, obviously he dropped down a bit in scoring, but his all around game has gotten to this next level, which I think probably 2 years ago, I would say this is where we were like, I wonder if he can quite get to that, you know, high 20s, 30 points per game with, you know, 8-5, something around there. That's kind of like a general, you know, average stat line. 27-7, the LeBron is 27-7-7, right? So, you know, figure out the averages around that. Can you get somewhere near that? And that's where Jason Tatum now lives. He lives in that category. When you see a game like yesterday where he's got 23 points, 10 rebounds, and 10 assists, and really from start to finish, it felt pretty much like Jason Tatum was in control of that game yesterday. And you start even with the initial possession offensively, right, where he misses the dunk. They run that nice set. He ends up on the in the post, ends up with a dunk, misses it. It ends up turning in to a Jaylen Brown three. But I think this is another part that I want to get to here, is kind of the mindset the Celtics went into with this game early. So I still always think back to Jaylen Brown. I think it was All-Star weekend, right, when he was on set with Draymond Green talking about, yeah, we weren't ready for you guys. You guys, you know, punked us in the finals. We weren't ready. We'll be ready next time. And I know this is something that Celtics fans have always been worried, like the Heat just have this, you know, whether it's true or not, a mentality advantage over the Celtics right now. Of course, without Jimmy Butler, we do have to acknowledge it, you know, but you got to play with whoever's out there, right? And that's Eric Spoelstra, still their coach. Bam Adebayo is still, you know, a defensive player of the year finalist. Like, it's not like they don't have anyone out there, and they still have Heat culture, right? This is what Heat culture is meant to be, one man down, next man up. And so for the Celtics, the way that they came out attacking the basket with Jason Tatum going for that dunk early on. Adam, you already talked about the move that Jaylen Brown had for that emphatic dunk right after that. And then you think about from a defensive perspective, you know, both Drew Holiday and Jaylen Brown felt like they wanted to establish themselves as basically defensive pit bulls early on, picking up from, you know, three quarter court, right around the mid court line, really just kind of establishing a different mindset. And for this team that has had, you know, hasn't played any meaningful games in a while, it felt like that was important for them to also set the tone of this game, both offensively and defensively, which also included just, you know, pounding some of those Kristaps Porzingis mismatches as well, and just kind of really telling the Heat, like, we're here and we're prepared, and we are now, we feel like we have this mindset that you thought you might have this advantage of, and they wanted to kind of take that away from them early on and then throughout the game.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Yeah, I think we should talk about Drew Holiday's defense on Tyler Herro. We've got a good quote from Jason Tatum on Drew, which we'll play here in a second. But some stats for you. Herro was just 1 for 3, so only got 3 shots off against Drew Holiday in 7 minutes and 23 seconds of action when Drew was guarding him, which is a lot of time to spend on one guy real time on the court. And I think Holiday, for me, you know, he struggled from the floor. He missed like some layups like badly.
Like it was some really easy shots that he didn't convert, but he made up for it in other ways.
Yeah, he definitely made up for it in other ways. But as I was watching the game, I just was thinking to myself, like, damn, Drew doesn't look comfortable on the offensive side. I think he hit 1 3, but he airballed a 3 like really badly out of the corner, and then he missed easy layups on Tyler Herro where I don't know if his shot got blocked, but it looked like it got blocked because he missed it so badly. But I just think he missed it so badly. So after the game, I really wanted to see how the Celtics would kind of talk about Drew's performance, because it seemed like he struggled on the offensive end, but he was so impactful on the defensive end. It was really nice to hear Tatum speak highly of Drew Holiday. So I want to play that clip here of Jason Tatum talking about Drew Holiday's defense.
It was huge on Tyler Herro. They need to hit a lot of threes if they want to have a chance in the series. And you guys were taking so many. So how important was Drew just not only getting those turnovers, but just keeping Hero finding a rhythm.
You know, Drew does all the things that may not always show up on the stat sheet every single night. His presence, his ability to screen, always want to guard the best players, take tendencies away. He got a lot of timely offensive rebounds for us tonight. You know, Drew's a champion. You know, we're very lucky to have him on our team, and you know, everything that he brings to our team for us to be successful.
And I think it's so important for guys like Tatum to speak highly of Drew in a game where he's not really involved on the offensive side of things. Holiday's usage rate yesterday was 11% throughout the entire game, which is pretty low. By comparison, Tatum was at 27.5, White at 20.8, Zinger was at 20.5, and Jaylen also at 20.5. So Holiday's usage rate was very low, but the fact that Tatum goes out of his way to give him credit in the post game, I think, is huge, because that's the role that Drew Holiday is going to need to play in this series, is going to need to take out Tyler Hero, because Jimmy Butler's not playing. And if they don't get offense out of Tyler Hero, there's no way that he can beat us.
Yeah. And I think that this is part of the reason you have two-way guards, right? This is why the stock exchange is so important, because there'll be times in this series and there'll be times throughout the playoffs, assuming Boston make it. Obviously, I want to just be fair and say, look, anything can happen. Boston are winning this. But throughout the playoffs, there's going to be a time where Holiday needs a higher usage rate because he's got a hot hand and maybe JT's having a bad night or Brown's having a bad night. And being able to have somebody that can scale their performance like that, it's why the Lakers see Austin Reeves as so important to them. It's the same type. It's why Marcus Smart was always so important to Boston, was because he could be this defensive guy, but on those moments where you needed him to become a secondary scoring option, especially later in Smart's career with Boston, he could do that. And that's exactly what Drew Holiday gives you. It's like, hey, I want to go lock down this guy and I don't really need the ball. And it doesn't matter if I'm scoring or not, because I'm going to be making such a huge impact here. But if you need me, I'm right here, you know what I mean? And I can turn that on and I can go and do that for you too. But if you don't need me, cool, I'm a chill. I'm going to cook this fall on defense. And that's kind of the difference this year, is you have two of those guys, not one, because Derek White can do the exact same shit. And I think that that's going to be so important, especially if, like, if Jimmy comes back later in the season and maybe you've got Jaylen Brown on him for a large portion of the game. So now Brown's offense is sapped a little bit more. Maybe you do ask Drew to kind of step up his turn in terms of, like, offensive execution, just because Brown might not be as explosive later in the series because of dealing with a Butler.
Yeah, for sure. And I, you know, going back to those usage rate stats, just for comparison, for how the guys dealt with that throughout the regular season, Tatum was 29.6 usage rate throughout the regular season. Derek White was only 18.3%, so his usage rate yesterday was up by about 2.5%. Porzingis during the regular season was 24.7, so yesterday he was 20.5. And Jaylen during the regular season was 28.3, yesterday was 20.5, right? So it's really nice to see those numbers kind of even out, because I think that was something that, after the All-Star break especially, we started to not see the ball in Derek White's hands quite as much as we would want. We saw a lot of Jaylen Brown. I think his usage rate post All-Star break was over 30%, and especially the last month of the season. So he was handling the ball a lot. And I think for this Celtics team to be the equal opportunity type of team that's going to lead to success in the playoffs, we need to see those numbers even out, with Tatum being the head of the snake. So I really liked what I saw with those numbers kind of coalescing into a bit more evenly spread throughout the team.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday, if you're just looking at this stat sheet right now, this is a very Thanos-like stat sheet, just perfectly balanced all across, right? Like, you got 30 points off the bench. So that's something that I do want to highlight here. Let's just the bench brigade between Peyton Pritchard, Al Horford, and Sam Hauser. Also of note, Luke Kornet was out for this game. We didn't see any Xavier Tillman, no Nemias Gittis. So they just went with basically just Al and KP as the two bigs. So at least something to kind of keep an eye on as we go forward here. But the bench was just amazing in that game yesterday. And when you're going to get 30 points from this Celtics bench that, you know, probably not so much late in the year, but definitely early to middle of the year. That was the question outsiders would have is, so what do you get once you go past that top five? And maybe they'd include Al in that top six and say, what's there beyond that? And you get 4 of 6 shooting from Sam Hauser. We talked about him breaking down that zone in that second quarter for 12 points. Al Horford, steady as always, 10 points, 7 rebounds. And then you get Peyton Pritchard. You know, Peyton Pritchard was kind of the guy that was like, well, what do we think? Is he going to be able to play in certain series? And we'll see what happens when we get into later matchups. We'll see. But yesterday, Peyton was awesome. You know, 8 points, 5 assists for him in that game yesterday, 4 rebounds coming off the bench, 3 of 7, 2 of 5 from three. You know, as JJ Redick said, when Peyton comes in the game, it feels like, you know, he's a guy that throws a wrinkle into it from a Celtics perspective, right? He's a game changer in the sense that he changes the way that they play. It changes the mentality they have with him out there. It's just a different feel and a different look with the spacing that he gives, and then also just at times the peskiness that he provides, you know, defensively. So I think yesterday, when you look at the way that the Celtics team played, I want to start talking about the Heat here in just a second, but when you staying with the Celtics here, this is such a balanced output for the Celtics here. 6 guys in double figures, 30 points off the bench. If you had to draw it up, I think most games, this is to a certain degree what you're looking for. And especially when you factor in that usage, like you said, Greg, where Tatum really is the guy that is setting the tone, leading, you're setting the pace, and is the one that everyone is kind of following. This was almost an ideal script for the Celtics when it comes to game one.
Yeah, and I think with Pritchard, you know, I was really paying attention to how the Celtics closed out quarters yesterday, because I think that was, you know, that's one of the things that we've talked about throughout the year and the margins of basketball and making sure that you don't let a team that's not as good as you make up ground in the last couple minutes of a quarter, right? And the Celtics in the third quarter with 3 minutes left, they're up 23, 80-57. At this point, they're 6 for 12 from three in the third, so everything's really flowing. And they come out of I think Spo called a timeout. They come out of the timeout, and I just wanted to see how the Celtics would close out that quarter. And you speak to Peyton Pritchard and his defensive intensity. He picks up Haywood Highsmith full court, first possession, right? Heat get into their offense at around 14 seconds just because of Pritchard's ability to pick up full court and pressure the ball. And they end up, I think, with a Kevin Love three that missed. And then the next possession, Pritchard, ball denial, Jovic brings the ball up. He tries to go empty side DHO with Robinson, and Pritchard kind of top locks Robinson. And as a result, Jovic throws the ball out of bounds. The coach's challenge that should never have needed to happen because it was so clearly just thrown out of bounds by Jovic. But Pritchard's ball denial there, and I got that clip pulled up here that I just want to show, because Pritchard was so impactful on the defensive end in addition to everything he does on offense.
They're great. 21-12 in clutch time. You know, top six offense, top six defense. If you zoom in just a little bit, though, in one possession games with 3 minutes or under, is there's a disagreement here on the inbound play?
And I love the game plan, just an intensity there out of Pritchard, where he's just locked into Robinson. He knows that he can't let him get any space. And that's something I really like about how Mazzulla is utilizing Pritchard, because he's such a good screen navigator, especially off the ball. If you put him on Duncan Robinson, Duncan Robinson's not going to be able to shake free, because Pritchard is so quick and is able to stay connected to shooters.
And that's been like a staple of the way they guard DHO this year anyway. Like I think I said this on a recent episode, they're 25th in the NBA for points scored against them when a team runs a DHO. So what their primary defense has been is don't let the DHO happen. Top lock, cancel the screen, cancel the handoff by getting yourself in between the ball and the cutter. And Pritchard has been a really big part of that entire like defensive idea. Him and Derek White are both really, really good at top locking guys and then forcing the back cut, which is always like, you know, a top lock works if a player kind of V cuts back off himself to try and back cut you, because you've taken away any opportunity he's got of coming over. When you've got somebody like Pritchard, as you said, that's an extremely good screen navigator, but it's also quick enough to, if he needs to go under a screen, he's going to be back on you before you've entered your shooting motion, or before you start rising on that shooting motion towards your apex, that he's going to make an impact on your shot release. He's going to speed up your timing. He might speed up, change the angle of your body slightly as you try and take away from him, because he's going to be trying to swipe down. I think he's been fantastic. And when you look at what he does offensively with how he controls the pace of the game, how he impacts the tempo of the game and the decisions that he makes there, when you put that with the defense, I don't see how you could not have him in the rotation unless you're going up against a team that just has a bunch of size off the bench, which this Miami team doesn't. And to be honest with you, I mean, what team in the East does? We're coming off the bench with a bunch of size. I don't think there's many to worry about that can handle the rock and hunt you at the same time. So I think we see a lot of Pritchard throughout this entire postseason run.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good point. I think there's maybe one specific matchup, and it's out west, that maybe it might not be great for Peyton Pritchard. But Adam, I want to kind of transition this conversation to the larger series outlook here, and I want to spin it to a Miami perspective here, where we mentioned at the top, no Terry Rozier, no Jimmy Butler. So immediately, and the two of you talked about this with Jason Timp on our last episode, where just from the get-go, there's a huge talent deficit right now that Miami is trying to make up for. And, you know, scheme can only get you so far if you don't have the talent. Talent rules all in the NBA. And it's when you're at least in the same ballpark, then maybe scheme can put you over the top. But without Jimmy and without Terry, this is a pretty uphill battle for the Heat right now, especially just trying to find the points, right? That's about 35 to 40 points that they don't have available to them. So when you look at yesterday's game and we start looking ahead to game two on Wednesday night, Adam, I'll start with you here. Is there anything you saw that Miami did that you think they can potentially lean into, and whether this is an individual performance, something Eric Spoelstra did that can potentially give the Celtics trouble here going forward? Or is this potentially just an uphill battle that they're going to have to keep clawing their way through, but they're going to need some breaks if they're going to make it a series?
Yeah, I didn't see much. Like, they ran a bit through Bam on the handoff actions, which is always going to be something that you want to do against this Boston defense. They played a little bit through Jaime, which I thought was actually okay. I liked the way he played. But really, in my perspective, the one thing they're asking for, and I will preface this by saying I haven't had my second watch of the game in yet, so there's stuff that I might pick up from there. But from where I'm standing right now, from where I'm sitting right now, Miami's best chance of being in this series in 2 games' time is going to be taking advantage of the slippages from Boston, like we saw in the first 6 minutes of the fourth quarter, where they come out, they know they're up, they kind of dawdle down the floor. They're not really getting into their actions early. Bit sloppy. Al Horford's getting pissed. Those are the moments.
Just real quick, Adam, I got that here for you. It was an 18-2 run from 749 to 357. So 4 minutes, 18 under 4 minutes, 18-2 run. It happened very quickly.
And those are going to be the moments where Miami can swing a game. Maybe they can even tie a series. This is a team that doesn't know when to quit. They don't know when they're beat. They refuse to lie down and take it. And if you slip for, as you said, a 4-minute stretch, you can lose 18 points off it. Now, imagine if it was a tie game. Imagine if they'd managed to hang around and then Boston have that 4-minute slip and all of a sudden now Miami are up 18 with 3 minutes left. That's how quickly things can change. So that to me is their biggest opportunity to steal a game or stay in this series until Jimmy's back, is by waiting for those slight slippages, those slight momentum shifting moments, and then just hammer the shit out of them until you can't hammer it no more.
Yeah, Greg, did that moment give you concern? Because this is really the only stretch of the game I think you could look to as a Celtics fan and be like, that was minorly concerning. They were up 30 at the time of this 18-2 run, but to Adam's point, in the larger picture, which, as all things with the Celtics, it's all about the larger picture, not just this individual moment. When you think about if this was not even just a tie game, but even if this was a 20-point game or an 18-point game in a 4-minute stretch like this happens now, human nature, maybe they wouldn't have dropped into this because they were up 30, like I said. But we have seen these type of runs happen before. Any concern, Greg, or just listen, they were up 30. It happens. They still won by 20. Let's move on. What were your thoughts?
Well, Mazzulla says, I have a quote from him pulled up here. He says, we had 4 turnovers and then 7 in the fourth quarter. So I would say that points off turnovers led to the comeback. 6 points on off-ball defense communication, and some of them, they made some shots there. DeLon Wright obviously had 5 threes in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
So Mazzulla says 70-30 was stuff that we can control, right? Those off-ball cuts, Jalen got confused on some switches off ball and some split actions a couple times on some back doors, And I think for me going into that fourth quarter, the biggest thing I wanted to see was that the Celtics were able to not let any of their key shooters, meaning Tyler Herro and Duncan Robinson, get going in the fourth quarter. Delon Wright hitting threes, sure, man. Like, go ahead, keep shooting those threes. He's a good player, and I think he'll probably see more time. And it was, I think it's a good sign for the Heat that he was able to hit those shots. He was a midseason acquisition. He hasn't really...
Do we think he's the new Caleb Martin?
I don't think he's
Caleb Martin. Because Caleb Martin's not the old Caleb Martin, I'll tell you that much.
No, Caleb Martin sucks. And I think that Delon Wright, you know, for them, that's one of those like Dean Wade type moments where a guy just gets hot. And thankfully, the Celtics were able to kind of right the ship before that got completely out of control, because Joe called a timeout, I think, when the game got to 15, or maybe it was 18, but, you know, 30-point lead or 34-point lead, whatever it was. As they started to come back, you could feel the Garden start to feel that maybe this team would blow another big lead. And the fact that they were able to stem the tide before it got completely out of control, I think is a positive sign, because in the past, maybe that doesn't happen. Maybe that gets all the way to single digits, and it didn't get to single digits. I think the closest they got was either 12 or 14 points. So it was a positive sign for me in the long run that the Celtics were able to put them away.
Yeah, and I'll stay with you here, Greg. Do you think what adjustments do you think the Celtics could see from Spoelstra in Miami going forward here?
Well, the Celtics were kind of baiting them into playing a little bit more iso ball than I think maybe they were expecting, especially with Bam, right? They kind of iso'd Bam a lot. I don't have the numbers pulled up on how many iso possessions Bam had, but it did seem like he was trying to go at Kristaps Porzingis, and the Celtics were okay with just going, okay, Bam, you're not going to beat us for 48 minutes going iso against Kristaps, but we're not going to send help and over help so that you can find shooters and things of that nature. So trying to get some more actions that force rotations out of the Celtics, I think I don't know how Spo's going to do it, but I think that's what they're probably going to try and game plan for, is how to get the Celtics in rotation, because the Celtics weren't in rotation much at all during the game.
Yeah, same question to you, Adam. Anything that you think that if you could put yourself in Miami's shoes here that you think you might attempt to do to get back in the series?
Not lose the first game of the play-in tournament.
That would have been a good step.
That would have been the only step that would have saved them right now. No, joking aside, they ran a few nice like actions. I'm going to have to go back and see if I can label them, where they'd have like Duncan Robinson and Tyler Herro in screening for each other, kind of like a twirl action, but in the middle of the floor. And what would happen would be like Robinson would come off a screen and curl around the perimeter. Herro would come off a screen and then kind of curl out towards the opposite wing, like the weak side wing. And that would drag the defense quite wide open. And then they'd have Bam cut through the middle and either receive the ball or set a secondary screen for Robinson or Herro to come off. And then they tried to create space that way. They tried to bend the defense that way. It didn't really work, but it looked like you're really testing the defensive, like the switchability of this roster by doing that, because you're making guys chase over screens, you're forcing switches. Sometimes Boston want to peel switch those actions, but it's happening so quickly. Unless you've got excellent communication, you're kind of just going to need to stick with your man, and then you're taking Boston out of what works for them defensively. So I'd be looking at more motion cuts like that, having two shooters put in an action, having them cut off of each other to the opposite sides of the floor and then coming over screens and making people chase. That would be interesting to me to really test how good Boston's perimeter defense is. How good is Derek White and Drew Holiday's communication? How comfortable is Porzingis switching in those situations versus staying at home? What happens if he stays in drop and you have to switch there? And those are the questions, if I was Spoelstra, that I'd be trying to ask in game two, ready to manipulate in games three and four when you're back on your home floor and your role players are going to play that, you know, that marginally better due to that home court boost. So there's a few questions I'd have if I was Spo that I'd like to kind of find answers to in the next game. But overall, I just think, even with Jimmy, and I'm going to say this, even with Jimmy, I don't think they were talented enough to beat Boston. Like, I think they would have been a lot better, and they will be a lot better when he's back. I'm not going to be disingenuous here. But at the same time, I'm not crying about it. Miami wasn't crying when Tatum hurt his foot in the game seven and didn't play. Like, they won. A victory is a victory. You move on. So it is what it is. But yeah, I think
that would be where
it would be interesting to see, you know, if Jimmy, it sounds like it's probably a small chance that Jimmy comes back. I think it would potentially be indicative if they're able to steal this game two. Now they're down to game two. If they can steal game two, I think that probably gives it at least a chance. But, you know, if they head back to Miami down 2-0, it's probably game three or bust whether or not Jimmy's going to play in this series. And so we'll have to see what happens. I don't really know much about the Terry Rozier neck injury. So that's another one just from the, you know, he's certainly not going to help their defense, but from them being able to create more offense, certainly having Terry Rozier there would help him or would help the Heat, I should say. Last thing before we move off of this game, there's a little dust up at the end of the game between Caleb Martin, who we just recently mentioned sucks. And also, by the way, how much of an anomaly, like how much more frustrating is it watching Caleb Martin all this season? Because every time I've turned into the Heat, I tried to find, yeah, man, Caleb Martin's pretty good. I get it. I get why what happened in the Eastern Conference Finals happened last year. Haven't seen it once. Haven't seen it once all season. Didn't see it yesterday. How, like looking back, just on like the history of thinking about guys that have moments that are usually just isolated to games, how much of an anomaly is it that Caleb Martin had that? And think about the series that he had last year. Caleb Martin.
Got to flush it, Will. You got to flush it. You got to move.
It was frustrating me, but he had a little dust up at the end of the game with Jason Tatum, where he comes flying in. Tatum takes what at first looked like it could have been a relatively scary fall, but he got right back up, was good to go. But here, quickly, let's just listen to Joe Mazzulla's thoughts on that particular dust up.
It looked like he hit his head.
I was just thinking, I was waiting to see what he was going to do. I was kind of excited about the whole situation, so I was just, I enjoyed watching him.
What about in terms of how he feels?
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What's up, Celtics fans? You know, the other day I was talking to two girls. Yeah, that's right, two. Who were telling me how into foreplay they are. And how they wished they had more single guys to do it with. No. Not that foreplay. We're not looking to get you teed up on the pod. I'm talking F-O-U-R-P-L-A-Y, foreplay. It's an app where single friends team up and double date other single friends. It's a more fun, lower pressure, and safer way to meet new people, which is exactly why those single girls love it. In fact, they love it so much that they make up the majority of the teams on the app, as in a 3-to-1 ratio in your favor, gentlemen. Look, we all know everything is better with a wingman. Just ask Jason and Jalen. And with foreplay, you don't have to sacrifice bromance for romance, because it's a chance to enjoy a night out with a buddy while meeting two new people in a more social environment without the expectations. And the icing on the cake? It's totally free. All right, it's game time. So head over to the App Store now and download foreplay, F-O-U-R-P-L-A-Y, and get ready for a little 2-on-2.
Crazy Joe Mazzulla.
Joey Jiu-Jitsu.
What a nutbag. What a nutbag this guy is. And it's become endearing, but I was excited. That's his reaction. I want to see what happened. I was excited. That was Joe Mazzulla. Did you guys have any thoughts on, did you guys think it was a dirty play at all, or did you just enjoy, kind of like Joe Mazzulla, the response by Jaylen Brown and others to quickly come to Jason Tatum's defense?
I was initially concerned because if you think back to last year in the first round of the playoffs, Giannis got hurt on a very similar play, right? Where he ended up hurting his back when Kevin Love fouled him hard. So the way that Tatum fell, I was initially concerned that he landed directly on his tailbone. And if you land on your tailbone, anything could happen. And when Tatum got up, I was very excited, obviously, that he got up. Not the same type of excitement that Joe Mazzulla was feeling, but I was excited that he was okay. And Jaylen coming to his defense in that moment, I think, was big, because Jaylen this year has shown that without Marcus Smart, he's going to be the guy to step up and not take any shit from anybody. And it was nice to see him go at Caleb Martin in that moment, because Caleb Martin, to your point, Will, gave it to Jaylen Brown. He completely outplayed Jaylen Brown in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. And Jaylen Brown, you know, he remembers that. So he was just talking some shit. There was some leaked audio. Caleb Martin saying that Jaylen's not like that. He's not that guy. And Jaylen was just, you better watch that shit. And you better watch that shit. And I like seeing Jaylen. You know, when Jaylen gets into the finger pointing mode, that's one of my favorite Jaylens.
Adam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was dirty. I think it was a bit over-eager. Yeah, a bit reckless. Maybe, like, you could see Tatum was going up. Like, I don't think Martin was took by surprise that he swiped Tatum out, because once you're in the air, you've got no center of gravity, like, and you can be moved anywhere. And you could see, and I know some Heat fans are saying, like, oh, well, Drew boxed out Martin and kind of pushed Martin in. No, he didn't. No, he didn't. I don't think it was dirty. I don't agree with Scal. I don't know if you guys have heard Scal's take.
Yeah, this is why I brought it up. I saw Scal's reaction to it. Yeah.
Have you heard it, Greg?
What did he say, that it was on purpose?
Anyway, he said, like, oh, it's weird how there was a timeout at 1:30 left, and then 30 seconds later, this foul happens. Like,
basically, Scal inserted his own context.
Yeah. Like, oh, they called the code red, and let's take Tatum out of the game. I don't think anything nefarious like that
happened. It was a little bit of a stretch by Scal.
I mean, that is the only way they're going to win this series, is if they take out one of our guys. So.
Well, you need to take out more than one, because you take out one, you just insert Al Horford. Now you've got,
I mean, honestly, that's something that, as we get later, especially as you'd look across, and this is actually a good transition here to look at the rest of the playoffs, that, you know, weekend one of the best weekends, just, you know, four games a day, weekend one, weekend two, you get four games Saturday, four games Sunday, really hard to beat them, especially game one. Everyone has a little bit of hope. There's always that, you know, maybe we can pull off the upset. No upsets this weekend. The home teams dominated 8-0 for the home teams across the board in game one. And so I want to look at just, you know, in general, the landscape right now. And Greg, I'll start with you. Was there anything that you noticed outside of the Celtics Heat game that just kind of caught your attention from any of the game ones or around the NBA?
I watched the most basketball I've watched in a 48-hour period, probably all season. I was pretty locked in. I didn't catch every second of basketball, but I did watch a lot. And I think the thing that's most fresh in my mind was the Pelicans and Thunder game from last night, because I watched the full game, and it was the last game of the night. That was freaking fun, man. Holy shit, was that a good game. I don't know if you guys had the opportunity to watch it, but the level of intensity throughout that game. We talked about, like, Peyton Pritchard's game plan intensity and game plan discipline. Those guys were locked in on SGA, and SGA still ended up with 28 points in the last two buckets of the game to bring it home. That guy's amazing. But Herb Jones, Trey Murphy were unbelievable in that game. Larry Nance had a couple of nice moments. That game was cool. And then I think, Embiid obviously going down and then coming back into the game versus the Knicks. I just think that if Embiid's going to be that level of Embiid, where you never know, he, like, well, I think he's in our text thread, he said it, very reminiscent of Rob Williams with the knee injury. You're just going to be worried about Embiid getting hurt anytime he decides to go full tilt. And that play was about as full tilt as you can go.
What a fucking play to go down on. My God, dude, just throwing it. Like, it's so crazy, because, you know, the competitive nature. You could tell that if you've watched Embiid since he's come back, he's very clearly reserved in every movement that he has for the most part. And this is, I just love that for whatever reason, he just saw a little bit of daylight. Now, this is in traffic. Just wasn't like he was on a fast break or anything. Like, he's in traffic in a set half court offense, and just that competitive part of your mindset that just throws caution to the wind said, fuck it, I'm throwing this off the backboard and dunking it in traffic. It I don't know. It must have just been one of those things where he's been very cautious of each movement, and just something clicked, said, screw it, I'm going for it. And it was an amazing moment. And then it was just, it just sucked to see him go down and then come back and just very clearly be still effective in different ways. And I mean, the Sixers had a chance to pull that game off, but very clear that he's limited, and we'll have to see what that looks like. Adam, any other moments outside of Celtics Heat that stood out to you this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Mavericks game was interesting. I was watching a bit of that this morning because Dallas just really struggled to score for like 24 minutes of basketball. What is it, 30 points at the end of the first?
Yeah.
You know, I remember when we were speaking with Jason in the last episode, it was I kind of chose the Clippers to beat the Mavs. And like, I did it jokingly because I try not to have takes that can bite me in the ass, kind of like O'Shea Brissett does. But what I will say is, you're going up against a team with four veterans, and three of them have never won a championship. The one that has is out injured right now. Kyrie's comment. Did anyone see Kyrie's comment after the game?
That's the one game I didn't see any time.
So like, he's like, oh yeah, it's a mental battle because, you know, we spent all this time preparing to play Kawhi and Kawhi's not there, so it makes the game harder. What? So you take away the team's best player and the game gets harder. That's magical math, that is, man. In that case, the Heat
Kawhi's missed 8 games leading up to this. It wasn't exactly like Kawhi was surprised not playing. It was like, yeah, he's been out for 8 games. Like, you should have been preparing for. I mean, obviously, like, he might still play in some point in this year, but you should have been well prepared for him not playing as well.
It was just a wild thing, but like, that made me laugh, and I think that was entertaining. I really liked how Josh Hart responded to Philadelphia sagging off him on the perimeter. Yeah. Josh Hart went 4 of 8.
The Knicks team is so fun. The Knicks team is so fun.
They're so much fun to watch and root for. Like, I really want a Celtics-Knicks conference final, just because, could you imagine like a game 4, game 5 in Madison Square Garden with...
In either garden, just garden, well, garden, yeah, to garden,
dude,
action,
garden,
right?
Just crazy shit, dude. Who else did I watch this weekend? I watched the Minnesota game. Was so much fun, yeah, dude. Oh man, that little drawing battle. I think KD was like,
yeah,
you know, passing the torch. That was a great game.
Did you hear Anthony Edwards' comments after that, where he was talking about? I mean, Kevin Durant's his idol, so he was just talking about like how that he's like easily the best moment of my life. Like,
really,
Anthony Edwards? Yeah, Anthony Edwards just. Honestly, he's so endearing. It's hard not to root for Anthony Edwards. Yeah. He's so endearing with everything he does. Because he, even when he messes up, it's just like he feels just like a little kid. You know what I mean? Like, he has like that little kid joy and energy to him. But he's also
like Anthony Edwards is like when your puppy is finally full grown size, but is still very much acting like a puppy. You know what I mean? That's Anthony Edwards for sure.
His like, that game was just great. That was probably the most, like, generally when I'm watching playoffs, I'm doing other stuff for around the day, so I'll watch a quarter, maybe two, maybe a half, and then I'll pause it and carry on with what I'm doing and then come back. I think I watched the most consecutive non-Celtics minutes. I watched the Celtics game straight through, but I think I watched the most consecutive minutes of any game this weekend on that Minnesota game, just because that's so much fun to watch.
Adam, how did you feel about watching the free throws?
I didn't watch free throws.
You just skipped.
Just them. Looked away.
Yeah, just pick my phone up, do some social media stuff. I'm not watching free throws, dude. That's
what. Do you know what's funny?
Jalen, 0 for 2.
I was going to say, the Celtics went 14 of 16 from the line. The only two missed free throws were Jalen Brown.
it's just, I don't watch free throws. I don't feel like I'm not going to learn anything. It's not going to move the narrative along for me. And if there is a narrative about free throws, you two are going to fill me in. And then I'll just look at the numbers and be like, okay.
There's going to be a big moment this year where Jalen Brown has to shoot some clutch free throws, and I'm just going to be sitting there like, oh, Adam, I hope you're not watching. Or maybe you do watch, and he hits the free throws for the first time all year.
No, I doubt we're going to have another early game.
They probably on the weekends. I think that they'll, especially. I think they'll have a couple early games.
You've got to appease the European audience, huh?
Yeah,
that's what it is.
Maybe that's the reason.
I had so many people message me like, "Thanks for getting up and watching the game live and live tweeting." I'm like, getting up, motherfucker, at 6 p.m. If I weren't up by now.
Not everyone understands how time zones work. And to be fair, we've had our own issues on this show when it comes to time zones.
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah, sounds like there's not a solid understanding there of time zones. But guys, playoffs are back. Meaningful basketball is back in our lives. Celtics up 1-0 on the Heat. Game two will be Wednesday. Quick programming note, we will not have a post-game show, as we're going to save that for our Thursday live stream. Once again, 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Central. Make sure that you guys are joining us on YouTube and Twitter. Bring some questions. Bring your reactions to that game. We'll talk about game two. We'll look ahead to game three. Anything else that's changed across the NBA playoffs, we'll hit on that as well. Adam, anything that you got a promo for this week coming up that you're writing? Celtics Chronicles, Celtics blog, anything like that?
So subscribe to the Celtics Chronicles. Just do that, and then you're going to be happy. And if you're not happy, I'll write more, and then you'll be happy then. And thank you very much. I love you.
Greg, any final thoughts here?
No final thoughts.
All right, let's send it over to some Black Sheep Optimus. Enjoy your week, and we will see you guys on Thursday for that live stream, 5 p.m. Eastern.
Yo, I flipped it like Simone Biles.
Miles from a throne, see me smile cause I found peace.
While I'm at home,
I rhyme a little bit different, got that sound of my own.
And with the time limit, I'm shifting, man, I'm proud that I've grown. It's that right time
to rise to the occasion, put the pen up on the paper
and flip the occupation. I'm getting motivated, it's goals to be created. I'm making this a moment, there's no time for waiting. See the city from a bird's third eye word.
I learn to observe, the many won't find.